Hi, Eddie here. Red and I have used Zencastr to record all of our episodes of Punk Rock Elite because it's easy, browser-based, and it gives us separate tracks that are easy for me to edit. It can also be used for 4K video too. Maybe we'll try that one day. It's really easy to use. It can do a lot of the editing for you, clipping out your ums and ahs, and adding an EQ to bring out the best in your voice, all from a single website. If you want to make a podcast but aren't sure how to go about it, then Zencastr provides everything you need to record, edit, and distribute your new show to Spotify, Apple, and a ton of other places that people get their podcasts. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use our code PUNKROCKELITE, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Punk Rock Elite, a podcast about NoFX. Because some days you just want to go somewhere and get ripped off.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get out there.
I just, you know, like, hey, yeah, it's a once in a lifetime trip, but I'd really like it to be the least lucrative thing that one could possibly do. And until selling the story to a TV channel.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to get some decent economics on this situation.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that we've sold this before we went is a good thing. So yeah, anyway, that's just our little satire there on the economics of backstage passports. Because today on Punk Rock Elite Podcast, a podcast about NoFX, with me, Eddie French.
And me, Red Redmond.
We're talking about television programs, in particular Backstage Passports, NoFX, voted the most unlikely band to have their own reality TV show. Well, guess what? They've got one. I don't remember.
Not only have they got one, it's great. Like, if you haven't seen it, you need to watch it.
It is fans. Very entertaining. Yeah, it's really, really good. It's from sort of, it was around 2006-07.
Yeah.
I think Ali Bryce. Hi, Ali. Even sent me a thing saying, because NoFX's only show in Indonesia, according to Setlist, was dated at this time. So it was about 2006, I think.
Right.
But the reason they have a lot of post-2006 music in is because, obviously, post-production happens after production. That's what post means.
Yeah. Because we're still a little bit unclear if they are playing Wolves in Wolves Clothing songs on this tour.
Yeah, I suspect they're not. I suspect there's a bit of editing jiggery-pokery going on.
Yeah.
But in the episode, we do see them, in one of the episodes, I think episode 6, we see them playing Franco and American,
yeah,
which has been out for a long time by this point, because he's singing the live lyrics. We all know George Bush is an imbecile. Mm-hmm. That version of it. On stage in, I think, maybe Jerusalem, or, well, one of their Israel dates. And so we know that's because it ties in. He changes the words at the end of the song to be upset. We'll get there. Anyway, how have you been, Red? You okay?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. I was in Manchester last night at Creatures Comedy.
Oh, great.
Yes. At, what was it called? The Corner Boy or something like that?
Yeah, Corner Boy. Lovely Corner little, Boy. A 7 nights a week comedy club.
Yes, exactly. But just the cellar. The rest of it is just a regular bar.
Yes.
But it works. It works very nicely. So that was nice. That was a bit of a last minute one. I think I got booked for that like 2 days before. So always the bridesmaid, never the bride. But that's not what a bridesmaid's for, is it? If the bride decides not to, the groom has to marry a bridesmaid. It's not like a second in a duel. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, so that was fun. I've got... next big thing for me will be Brighton Fringe.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's in like 2 weeks' time, something like that. Yeah, 2 weeks' time. Two and a half, three weeks' time. So that's very, very exciting. Oh, and I'll be seeing you on Saturday because we're going to see Frank Turner at Boom.
You will indeed. Frank Turner is attempting a world record to play as many... Is it as many gigs or as many venues?
As many venues, because I suppose you could fudge that by just booking out a room above a pub and then just going, all right, this gig starts at 2 o'clock and finishes at 2:05, and this gig starts at 2:06 and finishes at, you know... You just play like half a song or some shit. But no, this is specific different venues in different cities. I don't know if that... Anyway, you'll be able to find out on Insta and stuff.
Because I just had a very entertaining conversation with my girlfriend, who I'm going to be... Well, my fiance, I should say, because she is that, who I'm going to be taking to see Frank Turner as well on the 4th, because she's like a massive fan of his. But she just said to me, she was like, oh, Frank Turner's doing this world record attempt on the 4th, and I know that you've got something special booked at 2 p.m. in Leeds, but is there any chance you'll be back? It will be back by 6 p.m. for Frank Turner's gig at the Foundry in Sheffield. And I was like, I don't think we need to worry about that.
yeah. What we've done here is we've that's the thing, when you sort of like book something for a friend or a partner that is more their wheelhouse than yours, you mm-hmm. forget that they've got access to that information as well and are probably more readily looking for it.
I expected her to work it out at some point. I was quite entertained it's taken this long.
No, that's all right, that's okay. That's hey, a week to go, that's fine.
Absolutely.
It starts at 2. I think he's on stage at 4.
Yeah.
But that's okay, you know, get to hang out in Boom, which is a cool place to be, and hopefully it'll raise some awareness. We have got, literally just before we pressed record, we received from Mike from Latchkey Kids, Hard Press Mastering, mm-hmm. who's doing the mastering for the Punk and Trublick tribute album,
great.
Has sent over a folder of all of the songs that he has received and mastered so far. Just at the time when we couldn't listen to any of them because we've got this to do, so we'll do that. We've got an ongoing bit now, haven't we? We've got a literal competition that we run. And it has been won. Someone did win it. We're going to be playing little clips of the songs that you'll be able to get eventually sometime towards the summer, autumn time. We've been playing the clips and telling you the artist, and you, if you guess the track that they're covering, and mm-hmm. some of them are more difficult than others.
Absolutely.
Red selected Zero Cost to be the first clip we play a little snee view of, which is a sneak preview. A snee view. And Stephen White, hi Stephen, correctly ascertained that it was Jeff Wears Birkenstocks.
Nice.
So well done, Stephen. Everyone else who entered, thank you. You didn't win, sadly, but you were all correct. You're all absolutely accurate. Should we do it now? Should we give them another
one?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to choose this one. This one is from Bad Milk Blood Robot. So have a listen to this little snippet here.
Nationalizing values, it's so easy to succeed. Keeping eyes on the prize. Excess. Success.
Okay, so that was Bad Milk Blood Robot. Okay, so wind it back if you have to. Give it a listen again. And email only, please. punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. And if you win, I will request your address and I will send it out. Very entertaining. If you are certainly in the United States, as Stephen is, I have to declare what's in the envelope. So with the worth, literally. And I put in a couple of stickers as well, because we've got loads of them. So there's a badge. That's what you win. You win a Punk Rock Elite badge, a pin. In the US, that's what they're called, a pin badge, a couple of stickers, and I put in a little note saying, thank you ever so much, you know. But I had to declare everything in the post office. So I'm like, a badge, you go, right, and how much is that badge worth? I'm like, I don't know, a quid?
Like, to fucking...
How much is that sticker?
Yeah, and like, stickers, like, what are the stickers then? I'm like, I don't know, like 12p? Like, they're fuck all, love. They're two paper stickers. It's like... Like anything else in there at all? Because I have to declare it. I go, yeah, there's a gratuitary note, you know, like you get when you buy something off Etsy and they put a little cute note in saying thank you and it's got their logo. It's like I said, it's basically one of them, essentially. Yeah. And she's like, I haven't got anything for that. I'll put instructions. So so now it looks like I don't think Stephen knows how to use a sticker. So I apologize, Stephen. You'll receive a very condescending sticker on the outside of the envelope. Inside will be the normal things, and I will trust you to know how to apply those. So that's fun. Yeah, so look out for more of that. So Bad Milk Blood Robot there, they're offering. Let us know what that was. Cool. So anything... I've already asked you. You got anything coming up?
No, which is, you know, like looking forward to Frank Turner next weekend. We've got some like big, we've got some like plans that, you know, we can't really like confirm yet that we should have an answer on in the next few weeks, but I can't really talk about it any more than that. So that's boring, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, that's all right. No, that's fine. We had a couple of correspondents from our RKL episodes.
Oh, great.
So I don't know if you've not heard it or not, we did Rock and Roll Nightmare by RKL. And Danny Barrett, who's a big fan of RKL, said that if we thought that Rock and Roll Nightmare was a bit proggy, then was it Reanimator or something like that?
Yeah.
He said that one, even he's only listened to it twice. Apparently that one is like literally like Bomber pretty much plays everything on it. It's like a real
sounds cool. You know, I'd give more project. Like I'd love to hear more of RKL. I've enjoyed what I've heard.
Yes, apparently that one's a challenge for Danny, and he's a big fan. But thank you for that. And also Greg from Jersey. Hi Greg, I hope you guys are doing well, enjoying the show. Thank you. We are doing well, and we're glad enjoying the show. Thank you, Greg. I only knew of one RKL song from the Punkorama collection, so when you announced the episode about the RKL album, I went to go listen to it and didn't care so much for it.
Fair enough.
Don't get how Fat Mike could love this band. Okay. I can see in their sound how NoFX took some of their themes / sounds, but as far as listening and enjoying the experience, it was just okay.
Fair enough. I think, you know, like, you know, it's difficult, isn't it, to sit down in 2024 and imagine what it would have been like in the 80s to hear this music. Because I think in the context of the time, I think it would have been pretty radical.
Listening to a 35-year-old album, you know, it's...
I think it loses its magic a little bit. But, you know, hey, I can totally get why it wouldn't be for you. It's not exactly mainstream music.
I stand by my theory that people fell in love with RKL watching them.
Yeah.
And went, oh, fucking hell, that's incredible. And then, you know, we all know bands who were like, oh, the albums are okay, but live they're insanely good.
Yeah.
You know, I've got the first Body Count album. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Saw Body Count live. Fucking brilliant.
So yeah, man.
He was like, I get it now. I understand. There's bands that just can't be put on wax particularly well. You need a really, really solid... I mean, to be honest, if you picked up Nevermind and thought you were going to get that live, it's like you weren't, were you? You know, you were In Utero is a lot more representative of what a Nirvana show was going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they had, you know, Kurt Cobain said himself, it's very hard to get away from the slick sound of the 80s. You know, he didn't like how overproduced and polished Nevermind was. It was made in 91. That was basically still the 80s. Until Smells Like Teen Spirit was released, and then it became the 90s. Yeah, we've been through this. cool. Well, you know what? We've each had a busy week, so we're just going to enjoy this little music break and then jump over and watch some telly. So we'll see you in the main body. Television time. Mum and Dad are out. Gonna watch what we want on television. Maybe there'll be some tits or murder. It's a little song I used to sing when I was left home alone. It's not. Backstage passports. Okay, so we're still on series one. We are doing episodes 5 and 6 today because they're only about 20 minutes long.
Good episodes, these as well. Like, I've really enjoyed my research this week.
Yes, I've enjoyed this as well. It's, because it picks up a little bit, because the last episode we did on this, which would have been 3 and 4, if I know maths, not the best ones.
No, I agree. I think...
takes a little dip.
Yeah. But we're back on track. We're hitting the heights of Backstage Passport on these next two. Mm. You know, some great stuff in here.
I think back, like all TV shows, I suppose, you know, it's got to be eventful.
Yeah.
It's got to have stuff going on, and this has plenty of stuff going on. So we start, they're in the airport getting ready to go to Indonesia, to go to Jakarta. The first thing that sticks out to me on this as being an unusual thing is when Kent goes to the band and says, "I've just received an electronic mail."
It's a different time. It's a different time.
It doesn't appear to be like doing a joke either. He's not like, "Oh, got the old electronic mail." He's not, you know, he's just sort of.
Much as it pains me to say, this is what? Is it 18 years ago? Horrid.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, it is. Yeah, because there's no smartphones. They're all on, like, you know, WAP.
Yeah.
The original WAP.
With like flip phones and stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know that, and I mean, we'll get to it, but the stuff about Mike not being able to talk to his family, which is sort of a key aspect of some of these episodes. Both of these episodes, actually, I think they're sort of they seed it in this one, and then in the second one it's a lot more upfront.
Yeah.
Simply wouldn't be a problem now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like
I
think about like the difference between like touring now compared to then, and it must be like, so like everything must be so much more improved. Like, you're right, particularly in terms of like connections, communication, you know, FaceTime.
Yeah.
I mean, WhatsApp. Like, I mean, you really can just chat to people face to face, as long as there's some reasonable signal.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're getting this electronic mail from a guy called Tarkus.
Oh, yeah.
It's just made me think that he was an otter, which wasn't displeasing, I would say, saying, Indonesia's cancelled.
Yeah, Matt.
Jakarta,
so odd.
No gig, right? So Kent suddenly goes, right, nobody get on a plane. Nobody check the luggage. Nothing. We're not going anywhere, right? Okay, this is it. Right, okay, stop. Then they have a friend of theirs is like a guy who sort of books some other Asian stops, goes, "Tarkus, oh, I know Tarkus. I'll try and get him on the phone." They start trying to talk to him. They're like, "What's this email about, mate? What's going on?" And they go, "Oh, it's not cancelled, no." Because he's like, "Oh, I'm worried about your security." Now, I don't know if it meant like security deposit or like literal safety security. It's vague. It's an unfortunate double use of the term. So, and then Tarkus goes, "Oh no, they got like 4 minutes to get on the plane." And they're like, "Oh no, it's happening. Yeah. Looking forward to it. See you soon. Bye. Love, Tarkus." And so they get on the plane. It's all fine. They arrive and they've got a full police escort. like tons of riot cops and stuff. And there's like bomb checks and all this kind of stuff. But they've got that. One of my favorite bits is, Smelly says, "I've been escorted by the police a few times, but never had a police escort." It's like, you know, really, really weird that this sort of, you know, this punk band is just like, the police are like fawning all over them. And they do point out that Jakarta does have a bit of a terrorism issue at the time. Like, it's not unheard of. You know, it would make international headlines if an American band was involved in something like that. So,
yeah,
a little worried. But what I like is how the sort of little dawning of realization that Mike's trying to cover up when it turns out that some of the people on the bus with them were undercover cops. It's like, if Mike had just started talking about all the drugs he was going to do, or, you know, all of this kind of stuff, it's like, what would have happened?
Yeah. Well, thankfully he flushed them in like episode 3 or whatever.
Yeah. I don't think that's a problem. Oh, no, because he said, yeah, because then, well, he said, I'm going to flush them. And then he said, no, I think it'll be all right, actually. Why do you think that, Mike? I just think it'll be okay.
I think he flushed the ones that he didn't have prescriptions for.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, fair enough. But, you know, if you find the right doctor, you can just buy those if you are Fat Mike wealthy in 2006.
Yeah, you'd think so.
If you don't like your doctor, you can find a new one and get them to write you prescriptions for whatever. The wonders of the American healthcare system. Money talks. And you can't walk because you couldn't pay. So they're doing like bomb checks at the venue and all of this kind of stuff. And then, this is all going a bit smoothly, isn't it? Oh, isn't this going a bit too well?
Yeah.
Turned off the power because they need to pay $12,000.
It's such a, and this was dollars. This wasn't like in like the local currency.
Which I have no idea what it is, but no, I think, to be honest, I think a lot of places do just work with American dollars as well. They're like, yeah, we can always use these.
Yeah, okay, yeah,
this
sure.
time, you know.
Yeah, this time, yeah.
It was like in a friend of mine went to China in the 90s, and he was like, yeah, they told us to just take dollars. It was, and at the time in the 90s, wow. The pound was so strong, buying dollars was like, it's giving them away, you know. We were really, really wow. So it was like, you know, a dollar was about 50p.
Yeah.
I don't think it's quite that good anymore, but it yeah. was. Well, I mean, when I went to the States in 2008, 2007, 2008, it was
still pretty reasonable.
It was, yeah, it was. It was, I mean, I was on euros then because I lived in Spain, but yeah, it was crazy what, you know, what you could get for that, you know. And in fact, I think I might have even exchanged it out of my UK bank account anyway.
Because that's another thing that, like, you know, you compare touring then to touring now, and, like, you know, communication obviously would have been vastly improved, but also like payment apps and just generally how you can give and receive payments online is so much easier these days with the digital age that a lot of this stuff would be.
As I understand it, Americans don't have the ability to just sort of do bank to bank transfer, which is why they've got companies like Venmo.
Yeah.
Because people are like, oh, this Venmo app where you can just do a transfer from your bank to someone else. They go, yeah, my bank does that for me. and they don't charge me for it. It's called
banking. It's crazy. Yeah,
you know, it's the only good thing about the banking system is that you can just do that. And it's, you know, they're generally not going to charge you for it. They're quite happy for you to shift. Moving money about is what keeps them in business. You know, if everyone just left it where it was, it wouldn't be doing fuck all, mate. So, yeah, I could be wrong. Forgive me. Listeners in the US, if that is old news or not the case anymore, but because I did wonder when they were like, oh, it's really simple to transfer money from one account to another with Venmo. All right, what racket is this? it's like saying, hey, we are the what happens is you call us and we'll call you a taxi. Just call a taxi. You know, it seems like you've just added a step for no reason. Anyway. So that $12,000 they need to turn the power back on. And it also looks like there's no audience at all. It's like this big, empty space. And they're like, can we come to some sort of arrangement? And they were just like, no. No, can't do it. So Torkus isn't helping. And so it's sort of... And that's where we get our first break. So this is a classic bit of storytelling. It's like, oh, what's going on right at the beginning? It's like, oh, no. Oh, James Bond is finishing off his last mission. Oh, it's all right. He's finished it off. It's fine. Oh, right. Oh, this mission's going pretty well. Oh, something's gone wrong. What's going on here? He's not met his opposite number. Break. So we come back 4 hours until the show. If they don't pay, they don't get the power. So Kent is there like going, can we just have the power and then pay you after with the money we make from the show? And they're clearly thinking, you're not making any money from this show. We want your money now, please. And then he's like, well, is the show even going to happen? Because there's no audience. And they're like, oh, there's an audience. There's loads, mate. He's like, where? They go, oh, it's outside. So he gets driven like a mile and a half away.
Yeah.
And there are like thousands of kids waiting outside. It's like going to be massive. It's really, really fun. So he's like telling them all to calm down and it'll be all right and stuff.
He has to climb a fence to take a photo of them all so we can send it back to the band as evidence. Because like he can't just go back and be like, there's 11,000 people over there.
Because
people are like, what do you mean?
Yeah. And they just put their head out of the door and go, no, there isn't.
Yeah. It's crazy like how far away this audience are. Like they're being kept at the gate.
And it's and he's got his little digital camera with the big it's probably a 3.2-inch screen on the back. it's probably in like 720p this. It's like really high def stuff, you know. It's impressive shit. It's really, really cute looking at all the tech. And they're like, whoa. Because the thing is, he'll be like, oh, I hope I don't lose my camera. That was £1 million.
It's mad, like how it feels like in 2024, like you think back at, you know, like 2006, 2008, and like they're like the dark ages.
It is insane.
Compared to now.
Yeah. And the thing is like you sort of people, you know, people your parents' age or whatever, you'd be, you know, watching a color television that didn't weigh like 90 kilos. And they'd be like, oh, you don't know you're born. And we're like, this is cutting edge shit. Look at my PS1 going through this. It's mad. It's like I am the skateboarder. It's not like, you know, like, and now we look at them and we're like, what the fuck is that? Like actually offended at the presence of it. Like, oh my God, is that even OLED? No, it's not, obviously. It's insane. We've, you know. The shit in our living rooms looks better than the cinemas we used to go to when we were younger. It's that it's that fucking bonkers. But yeah, it's pretty great. And so the band are doing a press conference. They go off to do a press conference. Mm-hmm. And Mike is doing his usual honesty shtick of, we nearly didn't show up because we were told it wasn't going to happen. We don't know if the show's going to happen now. Who knows? And he gets a textual message, as I imagine Kent would call it. Says that it is happening. Kent sorts it out because he's like, well, we've got to, because it's a strange thing, because you're like, well, you know, if a show in Los Angeles was cancelled and there was like 11,000 kids, there'd be a right load of bother.
Yeah.
But most of them would just go home annoyed.
Yeah.
And some of them would cause bother. If any of them lot, you get the feeling, because of the sheer quantity of riot police, they've got like cannons, like water cannons, mounted water cannons on trucks and all this stuff, you imagine if even just one or two of them like told them to fuck off or threw like a stone or something, that militarized police force would come down on them all like a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a really quite a frightening, and I'm sure that, you know, those kids understand how their own country works and you know, how you don't, you know, misbehave and all that kind of thing. And especially if there is, like, a really present threat of terrorism. But it's a very, very sobering sort of thought. So they decide, okay, well, it's going to happen. Kent, don't know what he does, if he greases palms or if he just pays the thing or whatever happens. They've got power. They get to do the show. And Kent demands that Torkus sorts the money out directly after the show. And he's like, yeah, no problem, no problem. It's like $70,000, which is a lot. Because I was thinking 12 grand to turn the power on. I'm like, well, if they're making 70, then I suppose that's part of the outlay and whatever. The show is good. They enjoy it. Big, big distance between them and the crowd, though, with like 100 cops in the middle of it. But, you know, we've all been to see a show that's like too far away from the band and stuff. But, you know, whatever. Kent tries to get the money. Now, I don't know if you've been following this series, but what do you reckon happens when Kent goes and asks for the money?
I think there may be a complication.
What? Well, that's very cynical of you, Red, but let's have a look. I'm just going to turn the page on my notes.
I know we say it like every time that we do this, but it is wild how, I don't know, man, like these business deals, that there seems to be just gentlemen's agreements across the board in, like, you know, countries with, you know, shaky politics to begin with.
Yes,
I don't know,
with a very sort of black markety vibe to everything, or stuff like it. It's sort of like a it feels like those sort of places where there's like far too much government control and absolutely no government control all at the same time.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, it's, you know, that seems the balance of what's going on. But it's sort of, it's like almost like partially set up to just have that system abused, because at any point they can just disappear. And it's like, well, what are they going to do? Come and find me. They don't know this place. They have no, you know. And also, it also depends what the international relations are at the time.
Absolutely.
Some people might be like, we don't care about what, because I think, you know, they're going to be like, well, we don't give a shit what some Americans, oh no, did some Americans lose some of their millions and millions of dollars? Boo hoo. You know, there's that kind of vibe going on. And there's still the war on terror happening at the time, you know, that the Iraq invasion made America far less popular in some places than it was already. Which wasn't very in some places, you know, in some of the places that we've seen in this particular series, you know, they're going to some places that are, I mean, you know, mainland China, America and China are sort of always mm-hmm. swinging back and forth as to how well they're getting on and stuff like that. So it's an interesting one. Mike seems utterly unfazed throughout all of this, but I don't know if that's partially because of some of the stuff we're going to see in the next episode, like he's preoccupied.
I think they must have at some point before this tour and before they agreed to it, I think that they have worked out some financial deal where, like, they aren't going to lose loads and loads of money on this tour. Like, I think that the TV show is making the tour somehow profitable somehow.
It's making it certainly viable.
Because you are right, like, he doesn't seem to care. And, like, I do think that Mike cares a little bit about money. Like, I don't think that Mike is going to go on this world tour, be away from his family for so long, just, like, to lose tens of thousands of pounds.
Well, Hefe says at one point, if we come back from the tour with no money, how am I going to make my house payment?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And it's like, yeah, he's probably, yeah, he's still on a mortgage, you know, he's still, you know, still sorting that all that out. And it's a very real thing for all of them. And I imagine the crew, who are probably not getting paid as much as the band, they're also the ones setting up a gig, it not happening, them taking it all back down again, as we've seen, where
they are getting paid no matter what, aren't they, the crew? Like,
I can't see that. Yeah, that's got to be the case, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely. Like, 100%.
It wouldn't make any sense to not.
They're on an hourly rate, you know, they
or
get paid
per diem
work.
Or whatever, you know, they're, you know, every day on tour you will earn this much money, and they're like, okay, fine. And yeah. Presumably they're not putting their hands in their pockets for their dinner and stuff like that. That's
all going to be included
and stuff like that. So, you know.
But for Mike and the boys, I guess it could be different, but I suspect they're not.
I imagine there's a per diem for them as well, and yeah, that's it. I mean, that's the thing. Lots of people make a lot of wild speculations about how much Mike owns, how much he pay, you know, and all these kind of things. It's people assume that, and they're probably right in the vast majority of cases. You can't become a multimillionaire without having done something shady. I don't necessarily cop to that idea.
No.
Because if you do just sell a lot of records, or you run a business that works and that bands keep going back to, even though they only have one album deals.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Fat. And they don't sign contracts. They just agree to it. It's still done that way.
Mm-hmm.
And if people still keep going back for that, then it must be because they're being treated well and they're getting decent, you know, a decent payout as a result of releasing a record on that band and touring on that label and stuff. So, you know, I think you can do it. I think billionaires, that's very different. That's such a huge amount more money. So, yeah, I don't know about an ethical billionaire. That seems unlikely. Mm-hmm. But
Taylor,
you know,
Swift, though.
Well, yes, but she's working in the major label world of the music industry. So,
yeah,
there's some, it might not be her being the, but certainly unethical things, I mean, are probably being done on her behalf.
She's from a family of financial advisors.
I don't think she's
necessarily like the most ethical wealth in the world.
you're the Swiftie. I'm not. So that's, I don't know. She could have come from a family of car washers for all I knew. But that does make a lot more sense, your version. Sorry, Red's version. There we go. I do know something about Taylor Swift. There you go. So they get told, you're right, though, there is a snag, a little snag-a-rooney for the money from Tarkus. So got to meet at noon tomorrow, mm-hmm. and then you'll get the money. So,
And any guesses on whether he appears at noon tomorrow?
Well, the funny thing is that Kent's going like, so, and he's like, well, the thing is that we've got, you know, it's got to be noon because we leave at noon.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I'd say 11 then.
That's exactly what
I thought. You know what I mean? I'm like,
that's exactly what I thought.
Well, I don't think Kent understands how time works.
Let's make it 10-2.
Yeah. Do you know what? Yeah. Actually, if it's not too much of a squeeze for you, Tarky, me old buddy. But that's. I found that to be very, very strange. So Tarkus doesn't show up. A young lady does.
And she says, yeah, this is bizarre.
And she says there's a problem with their accounts. Yeah. I've written in my notes here, is it that they're empty? Is that the problem?
And then she's like, we can pay you in a week. But then I thought what's really interesting, she like phrases it something like, can you accept these terms? And it's like, well, I mean, what other terms are we allowed to accept?
She does talk like a contract.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's like talking, she's like speaking legal.
She's clearly had a little bit of call center training.
Yeah, that's it. I don't know whether that is a language thing, like she's learning a second language, obviously, or if she's been like primed to speak that way so that it will look like a legal binding terminology or something like that, because I don't know how contract law works in Indonesia. Surprisingly,
it's still not verbal.
There's still the verbal agreement in Scotland.
Oh, okay. That's
Scottish law. There is such a thing as a legally binding verbal agreement, which seems very difficult to uphold.
Yeah,
as a concept, but yes, you'd think that lawyers would have gone, well, the thing is that then someone can just say, no, you said I could just have your house and all your stuff, so now it is mine. And for a high court judge to go, well, this all seems in order, bang, there you go. Just, it's not, you're right though. It says, yeah, it'll be a week. And Kent essentially just goes, I see what's happening here. We're leaving now. And she's like, oh, can you accept this? I hope this isn't a problem. And he's like, well, I just need to get everyone in taxis to the airport now. See you later. Yeah. So, again, just nothing. She does look quite upset. That's what I've written. She, like, Kent spots the BS and says we're off. She looks upset, which is quite sad. But then they go on to, they leave and they go on to Bali, where they have failed to book a gig.
Yeah, I was like, I thought that this was announced really offhand. I was like, oh, but this is an interesting, like, you could really sell us on this. But they're just kind of like, oh, and now we're going to go to Bali where we haven't got a gig, but we're gonna put on a gig. We're like, oh, that's actually quite interesting. Could you talk more about that?
Yeah, please. If there is one problem with this format, because it's got, the format is set out around the advert breaks, and they need to repeat little bits here and there and have their images and flashing and, the logos and stuff. It does mean that stuff where you'd be like, ooh, that's a good 5-minute story. They're like, we don't have 5 minutes at a time for a story, you know.
I think like if this was made today, you would probably still get like the 20-minute episodes, but then there'd be like an extended 40-minute cut that you could either get through Patreon or, you know, wherever. Like, I think that we're better these days extending things like that. You know, I mean, like, yeah. this doesn't sound like very punk rock or anything, but I love Escape to the Country, right?
And sure.
Like twice a week, they do like an extended version of Escape to the Country. I think you get an extra house. Like they really. Whoa.
The thing is, keep in mind that being the millennials that we are, the concept of home ownership is
science fiction.
So it's so that's how that goes. But when this was released on DVD, there were extras, and some of them have found their way onto YouTube. Mm-hmm. So I think there's an extra 10 minutes of them in Israel. There's an extra 10 minutes of them in different places.
Because I watched it on YouTube, I didn't.
We'll have a, once we've done the next two episodes, we might have a look and see if there's enough bonus content to constitute another.
Yeah,
like another episode, because there's already at least 20 minutes. There's probably maybe a shade more. So if there's like half an hour more, we can do an episode on that, looking back over it and just talking about it in general, I think, because I think it's worth it. The thing is that they've not gone to places because the gig might fall through. Mm-hmm. In the part, like in South America, they were like, yeah, we're just not going to Colombia. Gigs pulled out, so we're just not going. Bali, it seems that they didn't plan on having one anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I would like a little bit more clarification on the story. I feel like, because my understanding is, you know, like Bali does have, you know, a lot of Western people do live in Bali. Like it's got a big expat community. So maybe they feel that it's going to be easier to set up a gig last minute than in somewhere like, you know, Indonesia, Malaysia. Like,
well, that's true, but I suppose, you know, they've done like China and Korea,
yeah,
and places like that. I mean, Korea is very, very, or South Korea, certainly very connected to the US, so a lot of their standards and practices are very similar, very comparable to what they would have experienced anyway. So that was probably the easiest thing, you know, the level of English over there is very high, and you know, and all that kind of stuff. So the resort they're staying at has a venue,
yeah,
and they go, well, can we just do a gig here? They manage to agree. They have to go on after the house band is finished. So who knows what they were playing, old standards, you know, like slow dance music for people to like have a bit of a waltz to.
I hope so. I mean, like, why isn't that in the show?
Because that feels very No Effects, doesn't it? It's like, actually, no, that feels very Me First and the Gimme Gimmes. This is where the Gimmes are going to be playing eventually. When resorts are full of old people who like punk, it's like, that's what it's going to be. They decide they're going to go $5 a ticket, and $2 of each ticket goes to No Effects. So this is where Mike forgets everything else, because he gets to talk about nostalgic stuff, so all of his other thoughts leave his head and he goes, oh, remember in the 80s when we were shit and nothing was good? Oh, I fucking love that. And they show a little bit of footage from 10 years of fucking up VHS, which we will have a look at as well one day. They released that in like, well, it would have been sort of, you know, 1993 or so, and has very little Hefe in it, because obviously he wasn't there until like 91 or something, 92, but show some very young Mike and Melvin, although they look really young in this compared to how they look now. But then you're right, it is like getting on for 20 years old now. So but yeah, so they so Melvin gets his laptop out, whacks up Photoshop, and they print out a load of flyers. And he seems to wander. I mean, the way it's shot is it looks like he walks down one street, hands out 9 flyers. That's I'm guessing some sort of social media. Although, what social media was there? MySpace? They probably announced it on MySpace.
No, but at that time, though, like, you know, print distribution did actually worked, you know, like you could pay a company to go and put a shitload of posters and flyers around a city and like it would actually get eyeballs.
But it was all one day. That's the thing. This all happened in
a day.
But he goes to Planet Disc, which is a record shop, and he picks, he shows the owner that he's in NOFX by pointing at their Best Of album cover and like pointing out that that is the man falling in the paddling pool. That is me. She's like, oh, it's your band. That's nice. And then he goes, yep, wearing the same shorts. Which is hilarious. Like, yep, those shorts I'm wearing on that, these are the ones I'm wearing now. So there's evidence. I'm like, your face is better evidence, Mel. It's not. Look at that. So he puts up a little poster in there. The show starts and it's like really packed. Like,
yeah,
there's like 1,000 people there, according to Kent's estimation. And he's probably very good at estimating numbers of people.
Yeah, I would like, because it didn't look like 1,000 to me, but like, I think you're right. Like, I think Kent knows how to estimate figures, and I think he's going to be better at it than myself.
Yeah, I couldn't say just because, and also, you don't know whether that was taken 10 minutes after doors opened or in the middle of it. So he's so pleased about it, he immediately gets arseholed. Just gets not quite as trashed as like when he gets off the plane. He's like saying he's saying manager, but with like a level of self awareness that suggests he's not quite as pissed. and Smelly's actually a bit concerned about how pissed he is. He's like, mate, are you sure this is all right? Can you cope? But so the band have barely finished. They've not even finished yet, and he's like so pleased. He like skips off merrily to speak to the venue manager because he's like, we're going to make $2,000 out of this. That's not bad for a day, you know. And he goes there and he's like super excited about it. And, you know, it's been promoted essentially just by paper and all this stuff. So he gets given about $1,000 and he takes this very badly. He's like really annoyed. The owner claims that there were 428 people at the show, and he's like, what are you talking about? There were 1,000 people in there. And he said, yes, most of them were having dinner. They were diners. He's like, you served 600 people dinner tonight? He's like, yes we did. So Kent throws the money back at him, starts screaming, slapping his own tits at the promoter.
Yeah, he's really drunk, isn't he?
And then he falls over backwards on his chair. And that is the thing. He goes, thing is, this is so insulting. You're making me feel like this. Starts slapping himself around the chest and screaming while spinning his head around like the Exorcist. But that is how it makes you feel, isn't it, Kent? It's an interesting approach to money recouping. And he's fallen over, he's on the floor, and then the encore starts, so he has to run back to the desk to do the sound for the end. And then we actually finish this episode very sweetly with all the band members talking about what a good job Kent does of sorting everything out and trying to get them paid and all that kind of thing. Hefe calls him the best in the business, even though a few episodes earlier he said, you're not indispensable. Because he didn't know what indispensable meant. So I thought that meant despicable. It's like, no. So that was very funny. But yeah, very, very sweet. They're all talking about how, like, no, he looks after us. He does his best to sort it all out. You know, we wouldn't want anyone else doing it. He's the best in the business and all that kind of stuff. And that is, that's like the heartwarming episode of the sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
Where it doesn't end on a joke, but it ends on love. So that's sort of quite an optimistic, fun, jovial, light-hearted episode. That one's quite, they run into the same problems, but they have quite a nice time. Like the gigs happen, they've had a good time with it. Yeah, they're getting
ripped off. It's a comedy, not a tragedy.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone's doing okay. And even when Kent is slapping his own tits about and screaming at venue owners. They're still like, hey, we wouldn't have this any other way. And it's like, oh, that is good. Nice one, everyone.
Yeah.
Episode 6, however,
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Eddie here. Red and I hope you're enjoying our show. If you have been and would like to help us make it a little more easily, then you can donate to us at our Ko-fi page, which is ko-fi.com/punkrockelite, or you can look in the show notes for our link tree. If you can't help us financially, we totally understand, but would love it if you spread the word to other people who would like this podcast. We thank you for your continued support. We massively appreciate it. Back to the show.
This is there's a few bitter pills in this, not the ones just because Mike didn't flush them properly. So they arrive in Israel. I think the whole episode takes place in Israel.
Yeah, it is. They've got a couple gigs in Israel, I believe.
Yeah, they've got at least two.
Yeah, it's like Jerusalem and then
Haifa.
Right.
Haifa first and then Jerusalem, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. By the way, we're going to be talking about Israel purely in relation to this episode because everything else is way out of our remit.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I was going to say earlier, like, isn't it interesting? You know, like, I think this show gets across to me that the world is more peaceful these days because I think touring a lot of these countries is a little bit easier. But I would imagine touring this country in particular right now would be a little tricky.
I don't think people are at the moment.
No,
but
no,
yeah.
No,
so, next episode or the next episode of this, I think they go to Russia. So that's going to be fun too.
yeah.
So they're backloading the places that are more difficult to talk about these days. Anyway, we actually open up with nothing connected to Israel. Actually, it's about how Darla Burkett, Mike's daughter, is turning 3. The day after they arrive in Israel. So they'll be, the day after they arrive. So, and it shows that for about 10 days, he's just been like really shit internet connection, been trying to do, I think it's iVideo. I think it's an Apple program. And they're trying to look at what's going on. And she's getting very upset because she's like, I want daddy to come home, and has to explain that he can't come home because he's working. And kids don't understand that. And he's, you know, It really does front load this with, this is a key story in this episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're worried about their safety in Israel because they talk about, you know, how there are like rocket attacks and there's bombings and stuff like this. I don't know what that looked like in 2006-07. I don't know what the state of play was over there.
I think that was another tricky, like rough period. I don't think any of it has been a particular
It's not. There's not been a period of plain sailing in the history of said nation. So, Hefe is worried. He said that his mum has told him to stay away from crowds, and he's like, you know, I'm playing a gig with an audience, don't you, mum?
Yeah, thought that was so funny.
Yeah. He's like, ah, that's difficult. The driver who's taking him from the airport basically says, problem with this place is that there's loads of different types of religious people who are all fucking nutters.
Yeah, I thought
and I mean, to be honest, it's not the worst summation of the state of play, is it?
No, but I do believe very strongly that you should you should help shape your own environment. So if you aren't keen on being around lots of, you know, religious people, then I'm not sure if Israel is like the country for you.
Yeah.
But maybe I've completely misunderstood why people live in certain places.
It was a contextless clip, so I don't know in what context that guy was talking. We just basically got like a sentence and a half out of him and then a whip pan to Hefe looking really concerned. And he doesn't really not look concerned throughout most of the episode. Hefe is the one who's worrying the most.
No, absolutely. But, you know, it is a wild, wild country. Like the amount of, we'll get into it, but like the amount of army that there are, like not only, just around the streets with guns and stuff, but also attending the show, sometimes in Bad Religion t-shirts.
You're not allowed to, as I understand it. I'll point out, I went out with a girl from Israel while I lived in Spain for a little while. And obviously because she was an adult and therefore had done her service in the army, it's 100% conscription. If you are you know, if you come of age, then you join the army. It's with very few excuses to not. And apparently, you know, you just, if you are in the, then you just have your rifle with you at all times. Like, just, you know, it's, but it's, you know, that's how they do it. It's, it is. It's wild. And this, and again, this was a long time ago. I mean, I don't think we really need to, but we should point out, obviously, no genocide, please. You know, that's the, just stop all of that. Will old cunts please stop making everyone else do their stupid, shitty fighting for them? Fuck off with it.
Absolutely, you know.
That's basically, our position. I thought, are we going to address it? And it's like, well, surely people would think better of us than. But no, apparently you have to stay to these days. So
no,
yeah.
No bigotry, no anti-Semitism, no Islamophobia. Just no. Be a kind person.
Yeah, and if you're and if you find out that even if they were your faves for ages, if they're doing a big genocide, tell them to fuck off. Actually, tell them to stop and then fuck off. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we're supposed to be talking about a stupid band. Anyway, fine.
We can do that.
We are doing that. But anyway, I just thought, you know, given how touchy this subject is, and I understand why. That's not, I'm not saying, oh, get over it. Right. But given that, someone will take silence as compliance or what have you. So, you know,
we
do have to point all of that out as well. That said, they visit the Wailing Wall.
Yeah. There's some fun stuff in this episode. Yeah.
Mike points out he's wearing a Bad Religion t-shirt on purpose. although having a cross with a no smoking sign through it, probably not that.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. I thought that.
It's in Israel. All the rabbis are going to be upset. Probably not. And they're not, because they've got rabbis at the Wailing Wall who approach the band. There's soldiers everywhere, right? And they're kind of freaked out at the fact that there's, you know, so many soldiers just all over the shop. And they get approached by some, and it turns out they're like massive fans of NoFX.
Mm. No way.
Yeah. So these soldiers are like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, my ex, she was at the Jerusalem gig in this.
That's crazy.
In this episode, yeah, she was a fan of punk rock and stuff. There'll be a few other little tidbits of information. Sorry, tidbits is what Americans say because the Puritanicals changed the language when they went over there. It's a few titbits. From her that she told me along the way. Which would be very, very funny and exciting and interesting. So, so they get approached by these. So there's these soldiers, they've got their arms around them, they're taking photos and stuff. Smelly wanders up, points at the guy's lunch and says, is that a ham sandwich? Which is really, really funny. Mike pisses himself laughing, and it didn't look like the guy understood the joke, but there you go. But so they're having a look around. Mike says, ooh, old wall. That was his review.
It is an old wall.
Hey, you look, he's not wrong. No one's going, it's not. He's right. a rabbi approaches him, and there's some sort of prayer. I believe that there's a box on his arm, and then it's sort of wrapped around with a sort of a black tape-looking ribbon. I believe the box contains a scroll of some sort. I can't remember what they're called, but I believe in Jewish households, throughout the household, there are little boxes that have got specific scrolls with excerpts from the Torah, particular passages in them that are sort of placed around the house. This is if we have any Jewish listeners, then please correct me if I get any of these things wrong, because there's a very good chance I will. I don't know what the wrapping around the arm signifies. And then he's given a little sheet and he does his prayer. You know, he says that he lost his pet. So, this is where we can say that this is 2006.
Yeah.
Because he says, I lost both my parents this year.
Yes.
And as we know, in my orphan year, 2006, goodbye parents.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, unless he means within the last year, in which case it could be 2007 as well. But anyway, there's a prayer for the dead, which is, I think, the Kaddish.
Sure.
That's what I've written down. I didn't research it, but that's what it is. So, and it says a prayer, and it's that thing where, even though Mike has been so devoutly atheist, or he describes himself as not being Jewish but being Jew-ish, because that's lovely. That's his identifier, because his parents were Jewish, but he doesn't believe in God. So he's an atheist of Jewish descent. I think he's doing that thing where he sort of thinks, well, it doesn't mean a lot to me, but I did say a prayer for my parents, which is sort of, you know, a way to think about them, but also, you know, they would have probably appreciated it. So if they are aware of that, then great. And if they're not, what has been the harm? None.
Yeah, I do it. Like, I'm not religious, but I'd do a prayer for my dad if he had passed, which he has not, thankfully.
Yes.
But he's Catholic, so I think I would do a prayer.
It's, you know, light a candle or something, that kind of thing that they, you know, and I don't think that's an unusual or even contradictory thing for an atheist to do, because it's
for them, faith, not you. You know?
Faith becomes cultural.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely.
It becomes a cultural thing as much as a faith thing. So, you know, that's how it is. Mike undermines this by saying it was kind of cheesy, Kaddish cheesy. So he and Melvin, the other Jewish member of NoFX, who probably you know, is familiar with a lot of these things as well, found that very funny. But thinking about his parents makes him think of his own daughter. And that, you know, I mean, the guy is still mourning at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also mourning two people for whom he has very complex emotions.
Yes.
As we find out from later NoFX, as we find out 10, 15 years later, you know, fuck you, Paul Bucket, I'm glad that you are dead on, you know, Father's Day on First Ditch Effort.
Which is such a dramatic turn from Orphan Year. I mean, like, I know that there's a lot of stuff in Orphan Year about his dad being a disappointing dad, but overall, there is still a lot of love there. So I do think it's an interesting jump to get from that to, you know, fuck you, Paul Bucket, I'm glad that you are dead.
Yeah, there's a good 10 years between those two things.
Yeah, but his dad was dead. It's not like he'd done more shit to him.
No, but I think the process, I don't know if Mike's done therapy. I don't know if...
Yeah, sure.
Because at this point, he's still married to Erin.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, they split and he is with Soma for a while. And she, you know, she became a Buddhist. So she has... So clearly, you don't just do that overnight. So clearly, she's always had more of a spiritual, maybe a bit more of what you could lazily call hippie approaches to things, you know, trying to understand things, trying to work through trauma, all of these kind of things that, and maybe Erin does as well. I don't know. But certainly, at the time when those things were being processed, he was with someone who may have had more of a spiritual or holistic healing kind of bent.
Yeah, sure.
Again, pure speculation, but it would make sense that if he comes to the point where he goes, no, actually, the thing that's holding me back is that I do resent my parents for some of the things that they've done. And everyone does, but you feel, culturally, you feel bad for resenting your parents anything, because the whole culture is, no, your parents are the ones who look after you and are good and all this stuff, which is why, you know, parental betrayal is so damaging. So this is why I was going, oh God, we got to talk about all of this stuff in the same episode that is set entirely in Israel. I'm like, fucking hell, this is like, we're really wading through this one. It's like, this is sort of waist deep swamp of an episode.
Generational trauma, global politics.
Yeah. They couldn't have put this one first, could they? Because then we'd have had the nice, fun Indonesia. Oh, there were loads of kids, but they didn't get any money. You know, it was... anyway. So, they're in Haifa getting ready for the gig.
Oh, yeah, we haven't even got to the gig.
No, no, no. All of this happens before this. We haven't even got to the first break. So, Haifa, they're at dinner and their guide, they're having dinner there. You know, their guide just goes, so, you guys scared of bombs?
Everyone should be scared of bombs.
I mean, yeah.
Bombs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, what is the context? Oh, of being on one. Like, oh, yeah, no. So the Hefe's like, well, I'm kind of, you know, frightened about rocket attacks. And he goes, oh, rockets don't reach Haifa. We do get suicide bombers a lot, though. He's like, But and the thing is, I will say, of that kind of thing, not only from my ex, but also, you know, my best mate grew up very near Belfast in the 70s and 80s. Just because these things happen with an alarming frequency where you live, mm-hmm. life does carry on. People don't just stop doing what they do. You can't not go out for a meal. You can't just stay in and worry and wait for sirens and stuff or whatever. You know, it's just, you know, life finds a way. And so, you know, that's the unfortunate aspect of it. So if people do take a bit of a blunt sort of view of it or speak about it bluntly, it's because they have to, you know, it's just how it is. So but they start the show. Hefe says once they start playing, he, you know, forgets himself a little bit and enjoys it. He also starts the show by saying, I'm going to change my name to El Haifa. So he's been sitting on that one all day, you know.
Yeah,
clearly.
Definitely.
So that's all fine. Then we have a break. Now, the setup to this is actually quite tasteless. The break, they go, oh, we knew something was going to happen. We see Melvin, his face is covered in blood. There's stuff going on. People are looking alarmed and shocked. Oh my God, what's going on? Oh, the gig was going really well until, what's going on? Oh, remember the bombs we were scared of? Oh, remember the rocket attacks we were scared of? Come back after the break to see what has gone on.
Yeah, he's been rocketed in the face.
Yeah, someone rocketed Melvin in the face. They come back. And Mike spins around in the middle of a song, smacks Melvin right in the bonts with his bass. Breaks the headstock off of his Dan Electro bass. Melvin's forehead bursts. He's got blood dripping down his face. But he does it because he got too close to Mike, who span around.
And he makes a really good point, Mike, as well. He's like, well, at least I play a Dan Electro, because if I played a Fender, you know... Yeah, he'd be in a lot more pain.
Yeah.
Because he plays it's a hollow body, right?
It's a hollow body because Mike's had back problems forever. Yeah. The Dan Electro bass he plays is very, very lightweight. He plays Fender Precisions in the studio. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think he has a Fender Precision as well, like as a backup.
Yeah.
Because obviously that one got broken. But they seem to repair it pretty quickly. But I mean, to be honest, glue and some clamps, as long as the truss rod isn't broken, you'll be...
Oh, okay.
Mike finds this very, very funny and says, you know, when other people get hurt, that's kind of funny. It's called Schadenfreude. Melvin doesn't find it quite as funny. Melvin also has the largest ice pack in the world.
Yeah, it's pretty comical.
It's the size of his own head being held on his own head. It's fucking hilarious. It's like a beach towel with like an iceberg wrapped in it. And like with that balanced on his head, and he's lying down backstage. Hefe's like gawping at him for a bit, like going, whoa. He's having a horrible time. Mike pushes his own nipple into a fan blade.
He does, yeah.
I just imagine for this one, they just had a different director going, so anyway, Michael, we hear Jackass is very big right now. So could we maybe hurt ourselves in sensitive areas? Could we? Yeah, let's go for that one. Okay, great. No. Whenever you're ready, love. Whenever you're ready. Okay, great. And cue fan. Yeah, that's what I'm imagining. Imagining him on a folding chair with like a loud halid that's just made out of a cone. like a sort of a flat cap and flying trousers. Anyway. Melvin decides not to go out on the town with a potential concussion. So he goes back to the hotel. So Hefe and Mike go for a little walk around the streets of Haifa. And this is quite fun.
Yeah, this is fun.
Hefe breakdances.
He does, like, surprisingly well.
Yeah, he likes breakdancing. He's, even in the theme from a NoFX album, he wears baggy pants, he knows how to breakdance.
Yeah, he does.
And it turns out that wasn't a lie. So he does that. They go to a bar. Someone says, I have a big present for you, which is sinister.
Yeah, I mean, it might be a rocket at this point.
No, I mean, it could be. It could be a rocket, apparently. They don't reach that far. They don't reach Haifa. It'll be a bomb.
It'll be a suicide bomber.
Yeah, it'll be a suicide. Yeah. I've got a big present for you. What is it? It's this really angry guy with a big belt. Now, and Mike is given, Mike says, is it a really big ecstasy pill? Like, oh, there's some of that classic Mike banter. And no, it's not. It's a surfboard painted up to look like slat fats.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. And they sign it, "So long and thanks from all the Jews."
And that is worth price of admission alone. I think that's a classic bit. Highlight
classic
of the
episode. Classic bit of bants right there. Everyone has a lovely time. So Mike is now walking through the streets of Haifa with a surfboard under his arm, which is pretty fun.
And then so, he goes to the beach.
Yeah, absolutely. So then Mike has had a bit of a drink. He goes back to the hotel with his surfboard. He's trying to call his daughter.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And this is when it gets very sad. So he's trying to call his daughter. She's annoyed at him. Oh, she's at the park or something. She's like, oh, no, she's out at the moment. She's like, you know, playing. Because he doesn't know what time it is and stuff. And he's really sad, and you can see why. It is I feel slightly intrusive watching it, because there's a bit where he just sort of rolls over, turns out the light, and like falls asleep, still in his like shorts. And clearly there's just a camera person stood in his room filming him. The reality of that shot is some guy with the camera is going, I'll just let myself out then, shall I? It's like, you know. But the next day, everyone seems a little more cheerier. They go to the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
Mike takes a surfboard, even though the Dead Sea, as far as I'm aware, is basically a lake.
Yeah, there's no waves or anything, but it's a photo opportunity, isn't it, for all of the band to be there with the slat fats surfboard, all mudded up or caked up in Dead Sea mud.
They've got sort of a Beach Boys thing going on where they're all carrying the surfboard together, walking like madness, doing like the Nutty Walk and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's good. They float around in the Dead Sea. Only Smelly is the one without hemorrhoids. And apparently if you go into the Dead Sea with any exposed mucinogenic membrane, it will sting like fuck. Hefe discovers he's got a mosquito bite on his ass just because of the salt content of the Dead Sea so much. But they float around in it. They're all excited. All the ones with piles are having a bad time. Smelly doesn't. He's like, ha 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 ha, I don't have hemorrhoids. It's very excited. And then they get like all sort of mudded up.
Is there any explanation why they have hemorrhoids?
They're just old. Comes to us all, mate. But I suppose sitting on aeroplanes and stuff for a very long time probably doesn't help.
Yeah, sure.
All sorts of reasons. So they float around, then they mud up. They sort of cover themselves in the mud, which I assume is some sort of... Either they're just having fun being big monsters, and then it's sort of dry, so it goes sort of a grey colour. That's kind of fun. There's a little skit that Smelly does for everyone.
He does.
And it's very, very funny. I don't know what it is. Some sort of...
I think it's the clay.
Is it? Oh, okay.
I think it's the clay that he's covered himself in. He fashions a poo-shaped piece of clay that he holds behind his back and then,
pretends to curl one out quite... He's really straining. And then he drops it on the floor. Then he picks it up and just starts, like, really chewing on it a lot.
Much to Mike's amusement.
The look on his face... It's like he's never eaten anything better. Smelly is like a surprisingly competent actor when he's doing these little skits.
Absolutely.
It's like, this is great, mate. I don't think I've seen Hefe act, but I'm like, if he can do it half as well as Smelly, then he's going to be doing great. Then they do some camel hijinks.
Yep, tried to surf on a camel.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm fairly certain those camels live miserable lives, so I didn't really enjoy watching that.
Fair. I've always thought that as well. Like, if I went to a country where I could go on a camel ride, would I want to? Because, like, they do seem generally overworked and a bit pissed off, and I don't know.
It's the Blackpool donkeys thing. That's the closest we've got in the UK. We've got the northern... In fact, lots of northern seaside towns would have donkey rides.
Yeah.
This is not to be confused with a Tijuana donkey show. They're two very different things.
Fair.
But yeah, Blackpool, I think you still have them. But yeah, basically you pay someone. Someone has a donkey on a beach. You pay them a bit of money, put your kid on the donkey, and then they ride the donkey up and down the beach for a bit. Hmm. It's probably exploitative and bad. They've probably found ways of making it better, but who knows? So anyway, they do that for a bit. Then they go to Jerusalem. They are at the Yellow Submarine. That is the name of the venue.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
And they're talking about how none of the band sort of really realised what a big deal the army was over there.
Yeah.
And like I say, everyone is in it, unless you've got a very... I mean, it'd probably have to be like paraplegic or something like that to not be... To not get your... I think it's 2 years for men and a mm-hmm. year and a half for women. I think you can buy yourself out as well, which is a bit...
Oh, right.
I might be wrong on that, but I'm sure wealthy families just buy their kids out. Because, of course, they do. It's just how wealthy people are all over the world. But, yeah, and then they talk about how they got out of active service. Because, obviously, they all get leave. They're deployed around the country. But they get leave for various things. But if it doesn't line up with the day that NOFX is... As a lady who gave herself an eye infection.
Oh, this is a horrid story.
Isn't it? Yeah, it's gross. If you're enjoying a nice snack or a meal, just, yeah, anyway, you've been warned. Basically,
we apologize.
it's wretched, but she basically says she faked an eye infection. I'm like, no, you gave yourself an eye infection.
Yeah, you gave yourself an eye infection.
By scraping out some gunk from her teeth.
Oh, my God.
And then just putting it into her eye. And then the doctor went, well, yeah, no, you can go home. Some antibiotics.
You've got an eye infection.
Yeah,
now.
Because you just have an eye infection. Another guy, less disgusting this one, says he lied and just said, oh, my cousin has a bar mitzvah. And they
This is the one in the Bad Religion t-shirt I mentioned from earlier. Yeah. And this is wild, right? Because he's like... Oh, I've just, you know, like I've skipped out or whatever. And if they find out I'm here, I'm going to prison. And it's
I wouldn't
mention this on telly then, mate.
Like military prison for like it would be like a short stretch, but
yeah,
it would be. I mean, it's still far too much, but yeah, this is one where my ex told a story of how she got to go to the NOFX gig.
Oh, cool.
And it was not quite as disgusting as putting her own tooth gunk into her eyes. As I recall, she had very good oral hygiene. So, you know, you've got to let that build up for a bit as well. So you just don't brush your teeth for like a week and then it's foul. It doesn't warrant thinking about.
Absolutely.
No, I was told that the way that a lot of women in the Israeli army get out of things or get to go home for a few days.
Oh, is it like how British school kids get out of swimming?
No, no, it isn't. Oh. It's a little more involved. But not much. You fake a urinary tract infection.
Nice.
And this is a totally non-invasive process. What happens is you go, urinary tract infection, ah. And they go, okay, well, we need a sample. So you go and when you do your sample, mm-hmm. you fill the sample pot, you take a coin, you just drop it in there for a few minutes, and then you take the coin back out again. And because coins are so fucking filthy, like money is just gross. like coins, you know, if they've just been in regular circulation, absolutely fucking abominable shit, right? Coins are awful. You go back and they go, oh my God, how are you standing? The amount of fucking nasty bacterial shit in your piss is incredible. They give you some antibiotics and tell you to go home.
That's clever because, I mean, like, if you were dumb enough, like, you might accidentally use, like, notes. You might try and use, like, pound notes. But obviously those have got traces of cocaine on them. So, like, then you would be in a very different world of trouble.
As I understand, it definitely has to be a coin.
Yeah, coins.
Yeah, and apparently that's – so at least one other person in that audience was there because they'd faked a UTI – in a much more sensible way than literally making yourself ill to go and see. Yeah, so that is the cleverer way. But apparently that was just something, pardon me, something you could do. And because Israel is very small, like you can just go, you know, you can be back home within a day, you know, in any direction, really. You know, it's there or thereabouts. So everyone is very, very excited because, mm-hmm. you know, also, it should be pointed out that, you know, a lot of these young people in there don't want to be in the army, have got no interest in being involved in that kind of thing, would rather that wasn't a thing. You know, it's as much as every nation likes to show that they are a united people with one set of core values, we all know that that isn't the case. So,
yeah,
a lot of people very excited that a punk band who are, you know, speaking out against, you know, rotten shit are there. Some of them get a bit too excited. Mike says that it's his daughter's third birthday and he's here. And the audience are like, hooray, he likes us more than his daughter. It's like, that's not the point he was making.
No.
To be fair, he says it really ambiguously. Like,
yeah, like, I don't understand. Like, if there is one thing that I don't quite understand about Mike is, like, he's very big on the punk scene because it's sort of like, you know, we can do whatever you want and no one and nothing matters and it's all like hardcore and someone's taking a shit over there and it's dead great. But then he goes out and he's like, oh, I'm sad because I can't see my daughter. And then people respond with just like, ah, we're at a punk rock gig. And he's like, no, actually, that's quite hurt my feelings.
It is odd, isn't it? Because,
but I also accept that touring is difficult. He's really in it at this point. You know what I mean? Like this, we're quite a few episodes in. The tour's getting heavy. You know, he hasn't spoken to his daughter properly in 10 days. It's her birthday. I do understand that would be stressful and sad.
Yeah, and I also feel like if another band did that on a festival, he would like make fun of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, oh my if God, it was the Warped Tour and Under Oath did it.
Yeah, I was literally going to say, what if Under Oath just mentioned that they were sad that
Oh, it's my parents' 40th wedding anniversary, but we're here, so you know, it'd be like, ooh, wedding anniversary. Well, don't do the gig then, dickhead. You know, yeah. He's not a consistent man in some ways.
No,
bless him. But also, he is really, really upset, and he's been burning the candle at both ends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been on tour for a while now. Also, a weird tour, not just like a regular thing.
Yeah, it's not.
No, I understand that he's probably frayed a little bit as well. I get that, but also, there's two sides of the same urinary tract infection coin. So, you know, he's not really feeling it. He doesn't really want to be there. But that can be the same as like a lot of other gigs that he's done. So, you know,
yeah,
you take it in stride. Then he gets gobbed on.
Yeah, it takes a turn.
Spat on for our non-UK listeners. And he hates being gobbed on. He hates spitting. He says it on the Heard They Suck Live album.
Yeah.
There's a bit where he talks about how much he hates being spit on. He says you can get hepatitis that way, which is true because Joe Strummer got hepatitis from copping a... I think the quote was copping a right greenie down the back of my throat when he was like...
Oh.
Like at early Clash gigs, like Baker and Johnny Green used to be on the side of the stage with towels like wiped down their guitars and stuff. Like literally it would be that fucking horrible. So yeah, and that put Joe in hospital with hepatitis.
No.
So yeah, it's gross, isn't it? This is a fucking horrible episode. Like it's like gross out, it's like violent, it's deeply unpleasant. This is an awful episode in that regard. Limo knows this. Limo knows. And Mike points at the guy, points him out. Limo sees him. Limo leaps into the audience that is made up of...
Is Limo security?
He's security and keyboards. So you better hope no one tries to fuck around when there's a keyboard on it.
Security and keyboards.
Well, they used to have Lee the Mod from Snuff. But he's UK-based, I think. So, yeah, I know. It is funny. And so then they were like, well, we don't have many anyway, and Limo can just about do it. And obviously Karina takes care of that these days. And Limo's not part of the crew anymore. Mm.
And then Jay appears to do some level of security, and he's just guitar tech, right?
Or drum tech or monitor tech, something like that, yeah. I mean, he joins in because his mate's getting in bother. But Limo is the sort of head of security. And you can see why. The guy's a fucking brick shithouse, mate. He's enormous. And so he leaps in to throw the guy out, and they're like, oh yeah, we forgot, everyone is in the army. so they all start attacking Limo. Mike gets in to haul Limo out. Like Mike, like people, like the band are saying, we look around and Mike's not there. And then Limo's like, I turn around and Mike's in the crowd. He's like, Mike doesn't get in the crowd.
Mike's had enough.
Yeah, so they kick the guy out. And his mates start on Limo and Jay. And there's like, oh, no, he was in one of the bands who played. So he was in one of the support bands.
Yeah.
He's gobbing on him. It's like, well, fuck you twice then. Because it is horrible. There's no real reason for it. It's like, you know, it's it's pretty wretched. So Mike is, where are we? Sorry, let's have a look at my. Yeah, so Mike then drinks a lot. And Mike's like, so anyway, I've been spit on by three different people. There's already been a fight. I look down and there's 19 more songs to go.
Yeah, they mustn't be like far into the set at all.
No, really, really not. So Mike drinks a lot of vodka, says that Jerusalem is the worst NoFX show there's ever been.
Wow.
He goes home early with Smelly. Smelly like goes straight back to the hotel, because obviously he's a sober man these days, and he's like, yep, that's just what I do on tour. Mike is like, that was the worst show we've ever done. People were gobbing and it was all just, they were just horrible. And Smelly's like, didn't seem like any different to a usual show, mate. And Mike's like, no, it was fucked. Smelly's like, I don't really see that, to be honest. So this isn't just about the gobbing. This is all coming to a head. This is the end result of a fairly heady brew of stuff for Mike. Goes down to the reception and says, can I get some water? And they're like, oh, no, you have to. There's no water. It's like, what? There's no water. You have to go to the pool, swimming pool. And there's a vending machine. And he's like walking through. He's like saying it's like hostel.
It's just, yeah.
And it does. He's not wrong. It's sort of all strip, like horrible fluorescent strip lights and shit. So he goes to get some water. He tries to speak to Darla and she's not in. She won't talk to him or whatever. And he's absolutely gutted. And this is compounded by the fact that the last thing we see in this episode is a video from Darla's third birthday party, where she's there with her mum and her little friends, and they're all in their like little, you know, cute little party clothes and, you know, having a nice time. She's blowing out her birthday candles. And then it just finishes with that last minor chord from Whoops, I OD'd, which is a really popular song on this soundtrack. They use it a lot.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
And it's super sad. It's like, this is the worst episode of TV ever. It's like super, like the saddest. I don't mean the worst, you know, but like, yeah. And then we get told coming up next time on Backstage Passports, but I didn't watch any of that because I'll find out when we watch it next time.
We will, yeah, absolutely.
So that was episodes 5 and 6. What do you reckon?
Absolutely, yeah. Interesting. Indonesia, Israel, the two eyes of
Bali.
International. Oh, and Bali, yeah.
Yeah, Bali in the middle.
But yeah, great. I think I preferred these two episodes to the two previous. I think what you get is a nice mix of danger, some comedy in the middle, and then some sad bits, which is, you know, like, I mean, that's the full pudding.
Isn't it? That is a full pudding. You're right. The popular phrase, the full pudding.
The full pudding. There you go.
Yeah, it was the full pudding. It is. And I think, I mean, it's careful what you wish for, isn't it? Because you're like, I wish more stuff had happened in episodes 3 and 4. Oh, you do you?
Yeah. Well, here's the full pudding.
Well, here's the full pudding, baby. And you're like, oh, fuck me, here's the full pudding. Yeah, I think these two episodes fulfill the remit of what Backstage Passport is more. And now, obviously, they can only go with what happened. And you can only finagle the facts so far. So if episodes 3 and 4 weren't quite as interesting or what have you, then so be it. Because if you go to places that are more volatile.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, in China, the threat is bureaucracy. But here, the threat is, you know,
physical
bombings.
is all of that kind of stuff. It's a tough one to work around because, you know, there is the realism, you know, how realistic it is that the world is the way it is in some places. And, you know, they talk about this isn't, you know, whenever they want to slag off a show, they always go, mm-hmm. It's like doing a show in California.
Yeah.
this is boring, predictable, and safe. And, you know, they're looking to make it a bit more exciting. They're also one of the few bands that can actually just do that and bankroll it themselves. Because anyone else who's on, like, a major label, they're going to pay all that shit back. The label's not losing out. You know what I mean? You know, the label's like, nah, mate. Whereas when you are the label, you just go, okay, well, we'll just lose that money then. You know, that's fine. And again, you know, whatever the agreement was with the TV show. Because that was with Fuse, wasn't it? That was the channel.
Yeah.
So they will have put up some money.
I wonder if what they've done is, like, they've got a percentage of the money up front. So, like, whilst they are chasing money during this show, they have already been given a healthy deposit that means they're willing to fly over the world and do these shows.
They can pay for the flights and they can pay for the accommodation and also the per diems for the crew and the band, I imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, that wouldn't surprise me at all. And then they go, upon delivery, you'll receive X amount or, you know, when it airs and all that kind of thing. And then they put it out on DVD as well. And that will have recouped.
It's quite usual that you'd have, like, some level of guarantee on a live gig.
Well, yeah, it would be, But, you'll have a guarantee. But also, none of those people paid the guarantees. So...
Yeah, guarantees like, are you, like, well, I can only talk from, like, you know, I suppose, like, it's 2024 now. I don't know if things were different back in 2006, but guarantees are sometimes, like, collected, like, before performances, like, sometimes, like, a week even before.
I imagine that these nations, or certainly the people dealing with it in these nations, go, oh, we don't do that.
Yeah.
Even if legally they're supposed to, they just won't. You know, they are scam artists. You know, like that was Jason guy from China, in Beijing, was it? The guy who's just like, oh, I'd feel more confident selling out NoFX than Bruce Springsteen. You know, that guy. there's no money. You know, it's like, what? Yeah, there's no money. What are you going to do? It's like, you know, they can just say it and that's how it goes, which is annoying, but there you go. Let us know what you thought about Backstage Passports episodes 5 and 6, and we'll see you in the outro. And here we are in the outro.
Lovely.
I did promise, didn't I? We've got some stuff coming up, but we will keep you in the old loop as and when it comes out. Don't forget our little competition. Wind it back if you have to. Have a listen. See which song you think that is.
Yeah.
We are we're very excited about it. We're still looking for a label. If you've got any suggestions or you indeed own a label and you'd like to put out a really great tribute to Punk and Droblik with the help of us. It is for charity. It will be for charity.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind. I don't want anyone to think they're going to make a mint on this because, you know, we're asking for free labor, soz. But everyone else has put in the free labor so far. So, you know, we're just asking for what we're willing to put in. Yeah, I think that's about it, really.
Have you seen any comments on Half Album? Have you seen, like, the general reaction to it online and stuff?
Very good point. Yeah, people are split.
Yeah, I there doesn't seem to be a general view of it. Like, I looked on a thing and NoFX had asked, "What do you think is the worst song on Half Album?" Which I thought was quite cute.
Yeah.
And I scrolled down and I saw one person was like, "On this album, probably Humblest Man in the World." And I was like, "Well, that's the best song on the album." So,
I mean, every single song was nominated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every single song was nominated many times. Yeah. But also, every song was nominated for the best.
Yes,
because they asked, "What's the best song on it?" And then the next day, they asked, "What's the worst song?"
Right.
And everyone's like, yeah, all of them. You know, some people were like, I'm never listening to this again. Oh, I've listened to The Last Resort or The Last Drag twice and I'm never listening to it again. It's shit. Other people are going, oh my God, the whole thing makes sense now with The Last Drag. It's so good. The whole thing, you know, like we were talking about.
I do get the general feeling that people prefer Half Album to Single and Double. I think that there was a bit more of a consensus that Single and Double weren't good, whereas with Half Album I've seen less people say, oh, this is complete trash. I've seen quite a few people say, oh yeah, of the three I quite enjoyed this.
Yeah, I think it's the one that's least demanding the least amount of time from you.
Absolutely.
But I can tell you that Half Album, our episode on Half Album, is the most popular episode we've done in a long time.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Which makes sense because it's just come, it's freshly out. It's what everyone's talking about. It was zeitgeisty.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a very exciting prospect in that sense. So, you know, thank you so much for listening to it. If you're a new listener because you got onto us because of the Half Album episode, welcome. We hope you stick around. We think we've got more to offer. And hopefully you enjoy that. On our Instagram, we had Timo the Barber. Hi, Timo. whose comment was just, "The last drag, though." And then a heart.
I think it's great. Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I concur. The last drag, heart emoji.
Yep. The Rip Radio, you know what? Other than that first one, it's not that bad. Admittedly, yeah. My expectations were less than zero. So there you go. That's that. And then, Ben Blood on Instagram just commented on the Half Album, one of our Half Album Insta posts, to just, "Thanks for introducing me to Goodbye Blue Monday, now my latest obsession." Well, you're absolutely welcome, Ben.
Brilliant.
They are fucking wonderful. Yeah, and if you want an album that's better than Half Album, let's go Goodbye Blue Monday by Goodbye Blue Monday.
There you go.
We've not had any album soundtracks from anyone, which is a bit of a shame. I was hoping we'd we'd get some because I thought that was a fun exercise in making the best of a bad job. No one has done. So never mind. If you still want to, that's open-ended. You won't win anything, but you know, we'll have something to talk about. So that's fun too. Yeah, let me see. I'm in Brighton on the 18th doing Poser.
Great.
You can find out about that around the place easy enough. Other than that, just regular club gigs in and around the towns. How about you, Red?
Well, yeah, I'm just looking forward to seeing Frank Turner with yourself next weekend.
So am I. That's going to be a lot of fun. Sadly, I can't really justify the price of Frank Turner and the Meffs at the Brudenell, which is such a shame because that would be such a good show.
Absolutely.
But what can one do? Never mind. So anyway, thank you so much for listening. punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. If you have anything to say until then, thanks a lot, Red.
Thank you, Eddie.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Punk Rock Elite. It was a Pick Scraped and Fruitcake co-production by Eddie French and Red Redmond. If you're not following us on Instagram or subscribe to the podcast, please do. The main theme and production was done by Eddie French. Please contact us at punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you.